Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another enthralling, exciting, and always hilarious, sometimes a little bit dirty episode of the Dual Screens Podcast. I'm your host, Andy, and joining us, or I should say welcoming back to the show, is Emmerich Toma, creative director of Haven, an RPG adventure about love, rebellion, and of course, freedom. Emmerich, welcome back to the show. How's it been, dude? It's been like 2 years since we last spoke.
Yeah, super glad to be back there, to be back here. Interesting 2 years.
Yeah, I feel like you came on the show, you talked about Free, and then you were like, you know, those guys are so awesome, I'll make a brand new game just for them. And this is the result. So
Fun and a little bit dirty. I remember that, so I made a game.
For those who are new to the Dual Screens Podcast, except for our friend Emmerich here, of course, this is the world's number one developer interview podcast, probably. This is the platform for those who have a story to share, be it a developer, a publisher, an artist, a voice actor. This is their home to do so. So let's just dive in, Emmerich. What the hell is this game? Because this is a very different in tone and theme than what Free was, which to me was a game all about getting mad a lot of the time, fighting bosses, and really wondering if I should be playing video games at all. And now I'm playing this game where it has a very more subdued feeling to it. There's like really heavy love themes going on. And what is Haven? That's kind of deep, but what is this game?
And if Fury was about getting mad and frustrating, then overcoming that and be very, very strongly satisfied, Haven is the opposite. It's about being relaxed and feeling cozy and feeling good and also a bit nostalgic and a bit the game itself is an RPG and it's a love story. It's not a love story about a boy who meets a girl and in the end they kiss. It's about an established relationship and you may see the daily love, what is it to be in a relationship actually in a modern way of showing it, not, you know, this very 90s RPG style of storytelling where everything feels a bit fake.
Right.
So it's really a mix of, when I want to pitch it, I always say Journey meets Persona, because there is
exploration. Right.
Exploration and also a kind of modern dating sim RPG. So yeah, it's a bit of that, but it's also, if I have to pitch a story, I say it's Romeo and Juliet, but in space. And they didn't die.
That's just, they didn't die. Yeah, that's great because I think we have one of the two most well-rounded, genuinely written characters I've come across in a long time in video games. You and Kai are the stars of the show here. And just their daily banter about discussing what they're going to eat for the day or even talking while they're in bed together or going on their little daily missions, it all feels very real. How did you write this game? Who are these people? Like, are they from someone you know in real life? Like, where do they come from, these two characters? Is it you and your wife? Is it you and your significant other? How does this all come together?
Well, the idea of this writing, I had it in mind, and I wanted something that was relatable much more than most of the RPGs I love. So yes, I do love Final Fantasy. I do love Dragon Quest. Mm-hmm. I do love, I would say, even Persona, who I really like because it's a modern context. It's students. They are going to bars or dating. They have little side jobs and they're living their life aside to their big quest. But in the dialogues, it's still a bit childish. So I knew I wanted something really like modern in the writing, relatable, realistic, but also fun. And I looked for the good writer for that. And we tried many different, very talented people. But when we worked with these different people, the game was not really ready. We were still looking for the gameplay loop that would bring the narration all together with the gameplay. Mm-hmm. So it didn't work until we found everything. So the gameplay, but also the perfect writer for that. So the writing and the characters, it comes obviously from our lives. Me, probably Audrey, who is my business partner, mm-hmm. but mostly Pierre, who is the writer of the dialogues. So he brought a lot of that that modern and relatable feeling and this personalities to you and Kay, for sure. He brought his recipe for making cool and fun characters.
Yeah, I'm not sure what you're paying Pierre, but you could have saved more just putting a microphone in my house for a month and just transcribe all the dialogue. Mm-hmm. What me and my fiance say to each other on a daily basis, that could be in your whole game right there. Any kind of weird conversations, you could have used all of that.
Yeah, that was what was fun to do. It's you don't, as soon as it's expected, you just, okay, let's not put that in the game. Let's put the weird and funny and intimate and usually the bits you never see in a video game, of course, but even more in any kind of fiction. It's pretty rare to see that in a Hollywood movie, this dialogues in bed. You see them before and after, but you don't see them talking about how lazy they are today and just want to stay in bed. And you don't see them, brushing their teeth in any kind of fiction here. It's really, it was fun to make. Like, from the point they get an haircut, they play cards. So I always wondered when playing an RPG, when the heroes go to the inn after a dungeon. Mm-hmm. And then you have this little music, fade to black, music, fade back to the game, mm-hmm. health points restored, and sure. That's it. What happened? I want to know.
Like they're doing something in that inn.
Yeah, did they go to bed at 7 p.m. and woke up at 9? What happened? Did they have fun? What did they eat? What did they talk about? I wanted to know that. Oh. Made a game about that.
I think the closest we ever got was in Final Fantasy 15. There was the loading screen. They would show like some on their phones playing a game or stuff like that. Just little snippets of what they could possibly be doing in behind the scenes when they're resting for the day. But it's like when you see those behind the scenes footage, like what's going on with these characters? And now they become much more real to you. And I feel like as you're playing, it's like these are very believable in love characters. Yeah.
But actually Final Fantasy 15, which is a very, very flawed game, mm-hmm. is very interesting because it also did something that no other game did. So the friendship and they are putting their camp. And they are, they have the big tents and the chairs and the big barbecue when they're going.
Yeah, you got to pick your recipe for your food. Yeah.
In the forest. And they're like, okay, let's put camp here and go easy. and it's pretty funny to have these moments of bonding between these four guys, even though they are in a mission in the forest. So I don't know. It was pretty inspiring, actually. I played this game just before starting, just at the beginning of Haven. Mm-hmm. I was like, it's broken on many sides, but it's still very, very powerful. Yeah, it reached me in a way.
That's the thing about FF15. It had a lot of good like bones to the game that I felt, if I had a little bit more time, could have been more fleshed out. But the bromance, the whole like, you know, four close friends on this sort of road trip sort of storytelling style, that was great. And you really felt that bond by the time the end of the game came
out. The simple story is much better than the complicated one. The simple story of four guys trying to escape, chasing, you know, trying to do something when their state has been, their realm and everything has been broken, is much more interesting than the rest, which I forgot actually. I mean, saving the world and everything. But
that's any Final Fantasy games in the world. But I really love how in Haven, how you have this core premise of this eloped couple that's escaped their home planet to find refuge somewhere else to start a new life. And you get like terms of like where they came from and how things function and how that's ruled over their planet. And it seems, again, it's very natural, but it's a background to the love that these two characters share for each other, which
it
comes through so authentic.
It's the big question is, would you prefer to live with people but without your special loved one, or to be with your loved one but never see anybody else? So that was a big question in this game, and you end up alone in on a planet with your little spaceship, which is a pretty nice apartment as well.
It's multifunctional. It's like you can live there, sleep there, cook there, and get around. But yeah, like you touch on themes like arranged marriages and just defying what the cultural norms are for this established society. And it's all very fascinating, but I think equally so is this game's core gameplay loop, where to those who haven't been following it, just exploring a uninhabited world with just its various flora and fauna is fun with the dialogue. But then there's, on top of that, RPG and actual combat mechanics lumped in as also. Walk us through what the gameplay is like for Haven.
Well, the story is obviously really tied with the gameplay, but the gameplay loop is basically you are in your nest, so your spaceship home, and you have to prepare to go explore, I'm going to spoil something that happens very early in the game. Your spaceship gets destroyed and trashed. So you have to fix it. So you explore the planet and you prepare yourself, cook some food, maybe craft some cures, and then go out and you explore this deserted planet with flying boots, which makes everything better.
Yes, of course.
I wish I had some playing like that. So the feeling behind that is you are down a ski slope, except it's not snow behind your feet. It's tall grass. And you are together, so two characters on screen all the time. Usually one is driving, one is following, but if you go straight, you're going to be side to side and hold hand.
I know, it's so sweet.
Yeah. Super hard to do though. took us a lot of weeks.
Yeah, it's like we talk about petting animals in games, which your game does also, I should say, but there are couples holding hands. That's the new hot shit, I feel like.
That was not easy, but very worth it actually. So you explore this very open and visually almost simplistic landscapes. There is no very little trees or vegetation. It's grass and rocks. Mm-hmm. But it's also very relaxing to go down these slopes, grab some food. And one big thing that's very important in the game is that you discover that this planet has been covered by what they call rust. It's a mm-hmm. kind of red crust over the ground. And when you go through this planet, you can follow flow threads. It's kind of energy you gather. And when you go over the rust, you clean it. So you leave a trail in this red crust, which is a bit like leaving a trail on snow. And under this rust, you may find either chunks of rust, which is a resource, or open bridges to reach new areas, or find food, or find whatever parts for your nest so you can repair it. So it's pretty much like that. Mm-hmm. You go out, explore, fight off some creatures. Creatures can be rested as well. So in order to clean them and make them peaceful, you have to fight them. But basically, you don't kill them. You you heal them by fighting them. And you explore. And that's your daily life until it gets more complicated, of course.
It always does. Yeah, so now we're throwing in Mario Sunshine into the mix.
Yeah, actually, I never played Mario Sunshine, and it's only people telling me, oh, it's like Mario Sunshine, blah, blah, blah. But I just checked it on YouTube, but I never knew that there was this similar mechanic in this game.
And you're like, oh, it's going to be so cool. There'd be like this cosmic rust. We're going to wipe it all down. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be this brand new innovative gameplay concept.
Ah, damn me, Miyamoto.
So on that note, the game is out now. It's on everything. It's on Game Pass. What's it been like, the reception so far?
It's been very much like a Game Baker's game.
Yeah.
Which means it's not for everybody. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely... It's the reception from players who are interested by the game is incredible. It's very, very good. It's 92% of positive mm-hmm. review on Steam. It's lots of very nice messages every day. We are actually making our first wedding through heaven this week.
Oh my God!
Someone asked us to make a special version of the game for a proposal, and
that is wild.
We made it, and I'm waiting for the result. I hope she asked us. Oh my God. He says yes.
Now, are they going to be serving apple dews at their wedding? Is that
I hope so. Actually, there is a chef who asked us details because he wants to make the recipe of the game.
Oh my God!
Recipes, yeah. So yeah, lots of cool stuff are happening.
That is insane.
The other part is reviews or critics that are not great, like mixed opinions, for reasons that I find. So basically, I read a review that is mixed, like a 7 out of 10, mm-hmm. Which says the story is great. The dialogues are incredible. Mm-hmm. The visuals are very pretty.
Of course.
The music is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't like JRPGs. Or, but I don't like love stories. Or, another thing is, or it's not deep enough as a JRPG, or combat is too simple, or stuff are not explained enough. And this is all true. Yes, it's true.
But it's intentional at the same time.
It's completely intentional.
Yeah.
The thing is, I didn't want to make another game with a list of quests, with skill trees, with tons of weapons and upgrades, with a complex combat system which takes tons of tutorials and 30 hours to get used to. What I wanted was to focus on the couple story first, and to make a game that's relaxing and simple and chill, and focus on the story, the dialogues, the music, and go there like you are going on a vacation between the Final Fantasy VII and the Cyberpunks of the year. So that was really the intention. So if you compare the design to a modern JRPG design, yes, it is much more simple, but it also does what they don't do. So for me, it's fine.
Right. And when you're playing, again, I've played a lot of JRPGs this year and more to come. And I'm still waiting for Cyberpunk to be a little bit more functional before I dive into that one. But yeah, I felt the same way when we see a game like a Death Stranding when it was released. It was, yeah, it's got great exploration, great scenery, but the combat is shitty. It's like, well, that's kind of like the point.
Yes.
You're like a delivery guy who can't handle like a pistol or a rifle. It's like, he's no soldier. That's kind of like the point of it. And you can hand wave, say, okay, it's like you're covering up that with, oh, just part of the lore. But in this case, it's like you're trying to tell a very intimate story, and the forefront is the characters and the relationship. And to bog that down with, go find the ultimate weapon in this cave, first go kill 10 rats, and then bring their hides back to the base to weave some armor. It's like you're losing the real essence of the story there, of what you're trying to do.
Yeah, that's thank you very much for the comparison with Death Stranding, because I really love that it was not about combat.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at an excellent masterpiece like Last of Us 2, I also think that I would have preferred the game without the ability to upgrade by 0.1% my reload speed. I don't care about this game. It's not the point. Okay, you can do it because gamers, but seriously, the game would be fine with just, you know, picking up ammo and that's it.
Yeah, with your standard shotgun, like find new weapons, but like again, like who's crafting and repairing weapons like in the middle of an apocalypse setting? But you know, to each their own. So actually, this is a good segue to my next line of question, because you've mentioned how you're not a fan of sequels in any way, shape, or form. And yet, here you are talking about The Last of Us 2 as a masterpiece.
Yeah. To be honest, I think... okay, to be really honest, I wish there was no The Last of Us 2, because I preferred the first one.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel the same way.
I the first one was a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. The second one is an incredible technical achievement for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a very, very well told vengeance story. But
this is gut wrenching, that game. It broke me on so many levels.
Yes. But it also broke something that was like a masterpiece in the first one.
Mm.
So for me, it kind of broke the memory of Ellie and Joel. Mm. And I was with them forever, and now I just have this second part in mind. So I don't know.
It's tough. It's like
it's very difficult. Yeah.
When I go back and I watch like some of my favorite horror movie franchises, like Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street, you watch like characters go through a whole like story arc in one film, mm. and then by the time the sequel rolls up, it's like, okay, let's kill them in the first 5 minutes of the movie. It's like, yeah, but they went through hell. They went through 90 minutes of hell to overcome a psycho killer, and you cheer for them. And then it's just, yeah, we got to kill them now because storytelling and out with the old, in with the new. And it's like, why? Why did they go through all that just to end up dead in the next movie?
That's terrible. I don't see a good example of... I can understand the trilogies. I can understand mm-hmm. the series, like you know, Persona 1, 2, 4. It's our different character,
Final Fantasy. Right, those are wholly like... Or like but a Final Fantasy situation.
Like an actual sequel. Something that was not planned, but then is added on top. First one was great,
right.
It's tough to beat.
It is. Like, I look back at Metal Gear, because Metal Gear throughout the years is, if you really read up on what those games are trying to tell you with all that terminology, it's like,
yeah.
At what point are you just throwing shit in there just for the fuck of it?
Yeah.
So was this always your plan, like after Fury came out and it was a huge hit? Like, I make a totally different kind of game, because I know that it would have been easier to go the sequel route and just do, okay, we'll do more bosses, more weapons, more everything, and just dial it up. But you were like, nah, that game was great on its own, and now I want to do something a little bit different.
It was always the plan not to do a Furio-related game after. Mm-hmm. But it was not exactly clear what we would do, and it started... Even started as a much more action-y game. It was a love story. It was the same kind of theme, but it was more action-y. And then for many complicated reasons, we removed everything that was action-y until it became a point and click. And then because it was crap, it was not a good game. We put back gliding and combat mm-hmm. as a JRPG, but it took a year and a half to find the balance between these two elements. But as soon as we finished Fury, it was okay. Let's do a love story adventure game, which was pretty different from Fury.
It's a departure, yeah.
But was it's still a game about freedom.
It is. I know. I was like, that's your main core element. So you're going to be like, what's his face that did Shadow of the Colossus and Aiko and The Last Guardian. Yes. You'll be the Ueda. You'd be like, we'll focus on freedom. So your third game, it's got to be, it's all in the same universe, just at different times.
Confirming anything.
Oh, I think you just did, sir.
Yeah, that's probably what's going to happen.
Was the idea to always push for a cooperative game in development?
No. Actually, the co-op, it was really a solo game. Mm. But then the two characters on screen, and then people were like, oh, it's a co-op game. Oh, it's a co-op game. So I took a couple of weeks, and I didn't want to make it a co-op game at all. But then I said, okay, if we make it a co-op game, then we make it not only... We have to find something that is more than combat and exploration. Mm-hmm. There is something that has to be in the storytelling thing. And that's why we came with, the dialogue choices cooperative mechanic. So basically in the game you have the two characters, they chat, and sometimes there is a choice presented to the player, It's a dialogue choice between two different sentences that one character can say. And it always leads to branching in the dialogue, so a new dialogue. And sometimes it also gives you some special points that have an impact on the ending. So when you play solo, you just choose whatever sentence you prefer and move on with the story. Mm-hmm. When you play co-op, both characters, both players have to agree on what they will say. Because it's always dialogues about the intimacy of a couple. When you play together on the couch with your special one or a good friend or someone who is probably not
related to you,
your mother.
Yeah, because my brother came by and he's like, any fun co-op games? I was like, this might be weird if we played it together. I like it, but I don't know about this.
I had a brother and sister who played it and it was really fun to watch. But so you choose that and it's funny because this sentence, they always trigger a dialogue on the couch, which is, I think, a very good co-op mechanic. When people interact with each other on the couch, it's a good co-op thing. It's even better than combat or... that's a real co-op for me, is the dialogue choices. But of course, you can fight together and you have to time your actions together.
Yeah, that's really funny. Neat.
Mm-hmm. And you also... The exploration is fun also because at first we gave control to both players, to each character, but it was a nightmare because as soon as you don't go straight, you don't really, the camera is looking at one direction, but your character you have to adapt your the control is relative to the character and not the camera, so it's messy. So we killed that and we made, okay, there is one character driving and one character following, and the following one can move a flow blob, like a little projection of flow, which can clean the rest. So basically it's one driving and one collecting.
Yeah, now it's like Mario Kart Double Dash, you know, just all the...
Yes, so that's Sunshine was not a reference, but Double Dash for sure is one.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, why do I suck so much at gliding and drifting? I'm like, I don't want to play Mario Kart.
Well, yeah, I think at one point I was a speedrunner at Double Dash. I was,
oh god,
it was hard to know because internet was not there really, no YouTube and stuff, but I was worldwide good.
Oh man, look at you.
Yeah, I think because I'm very average at video games, so I was probably very average, but I won against my friends.
Yeah, I think we think we're good up to a certain point. Then when you play against actual gamers, like I can't play for shit. Like I should just burn all my consoles and just never play games ever again.
I'm a very, very average player. I'm sorry for Fury, everyone.
Yeah, I think the last time I gave you a good dressing down about Fury, but you know, it gave me a lot of joy as well as a lot of anger. So what would an apple do taste like? Like what's that going to be like for you guys when you start recipe planning for this wedding?
Yeah. I will leave the chef who contacted us answer that question. For me, actually, there was a logic behind all the food and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's like apple dew is sweet. Mm-hmm. It's carbs basically. Boba nuts are proteins. And cranberries are a fat. I don't know how to say in English, but you know, these three different kind of stuff you can find in food. So it's a bit like meat, fruits, and cheese, and you combine all this, or dairy.
The sweet, the savory.
Yeah. So you can pretty much make every cool recipe if you have all these three kind of version of food.
Those basic foods, yeah. Yeah.
So that was the idea. And then the plants that you can make cures with, you can also add them to your meals, and it's more like spice.
I got that, yeah. Yep. It's, again, there's so many little things that you don't think are in this game with the systems. Like, there's a lot of depth for, again, and it's not too much, but there's just enough where it's casual, but it's not a mindless, like, I'm clicking through dialogue like a visual novel in a sense. Like, there's engaging parts to be had with Haven. What's it been like working on next-gen consoles for you guys? Exciting, frustrating, challenging?
It's been exciting because it's always exciting when you are making a game for almost launch of a new console. Mm-hmm. But it's also been difficult because of COVID.
Oh, yeah.
So we got the dev kits very late. So we were in stress, not knowing really if we could deliver the game in time. And it's like, I don't have a PS5 or a next-gen console at home right now. I have a dev kit and that's it. Couldn't find one. So lots of things you don't really know until you see them in a retail console. Mm-hmm. On the dev kits, you can make your game run, but you don't really see how the store works. You don't really see what do the icon looks like, integrated, all the visual assets. You don't really know what activities are, but you have just pages of documentation, but it's not the same. I've seen it integrated in the game. So it was not easy at all. But in the end, I'm very glad we did it. Some players said, oh, how come it's not on PS4 and it's on PS5? And I say, yes.
Yes. It's next question.
Yeah. I mean, it's easier. It's a stronger console. It's a new one. So you have almost no optimization to do. And it's running at 60 FPS, 4K, no problem. While PS4, it's more work actually, even if it's there. So we are closing the PS4 and Switch version right now to release early next year.
Oh, nice.
And then we will be there on every platform.
How have you found like using the DualSense controller as a developer?
That's another example of something that was frustrating because the controller is very good when you hold it. I like it a lot, but I didn't have any example, so I didn't have Astro's Playroom to.
Oh man!
to be like amazed with it and say, okay, let's try to do a little bit like that. Mm-hmm. So there is another difference. Astro's Playroom or some games that use the controller well are console specific, as are PlayStation games. Right. So when you make a game and your objective is to do the best you can on PS5 for the DualSense, you can spend a lot of time working with that. Mm-hmm. When you make a multiplayer game that has to ship on time on
PC and Xbox Series X,
a small indie, you make Vibrations. And then you look at the DualSense and you add a little touch here and there. So that's what we did. But I wouldn't say we used all the controller's potential. And I would be surprised that all multiplayer games use the controller's potential because they're always going to be in a hurry and working for multi-platform.
It's not easy because I feel like, to your point, people want to just get it, like have that parity across all systems. And then, but do you see yourselves going back at some point, all right, now that the game has been shipped, it's on PS4 now, revisiting what the DualSense can do and maybe adding features at some point along the line?
It's already
fuck it at this point.
No, yeah, it's a hard choice because I would love to, but at the same time, if I spend say 3 months working on the DualSense, mm-hmm. it's 3 months that I'm not gonna work on content for even multi-platform. So do I want to add content for Steam players, Xbox players, and PlayStation players, or only PS5 players?
Correct.
And even PS4 players will not have anything to play with. So I don't know. It depends. If it sells super well on PS5, yes. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, vibrations are okay.
Let's shift gears to Game Pass. It is on Game Pass currently.
Yes.
What was that arrangement like? Did Microsoft approach you guys, say, hey, this game looks amazing, we want it on our platform? What was that dialogue like between them?
It's a bit of them and us. It's we always, as a developer, we always have contacts with Microsoft, Sony, Steam, Nintendo, Epic, and whoever wants to talk with us. Mm-hmm. So we keep talking while we make the game. And at one point, there was a Game Pass discussion. Mm-hmm. And eventually, we found something that was fitting. So that's how it works. They give you money, or at least a little bit of money ahead, and then pay when you release, against the fact that it's going to be free for the Game Pass subscribers, which is interesting. Right now, for us, when you are allowed to release at the same time on other platforms, which is going to be more problematic, I expect, in, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, when subscription models are going to be more mainstream or more...
Right, more the norm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the problem with that is... if it's your only way to get revenue, then you don't have money after the launch. You use the money to make the game, and then you're broke. So here it's fine because we have a bit of everything. We have
There's other Microsoft revenue Game Pass for you guys.
Game Pass is basically our money for Xbox, and then we have also. The sale from PC and PlayStation and soon Switch revenue. But if we say, okay, we're going to make a Game Pass exclusive game, then we would not have any more money after we launch. So I don't know about these suppression things. Like Luna, Amazon Luna, and Stadia is not subscription yet, but it's going there.
Stadia has to be retooled, I think, at some point entirely. It just... I don't know what's up with that device. I got like two of them for free because I have YouTube Premium. So they're like, you're just giving it away right now. have you seen metrics in terms of your downloads on Game Pass compared to your PS5 and your Steam purchases? Is that like is it a huge difference between how they're engaging with the game?
Yeah. Well, of course, there is much more downloads on this Game Pass because it's free. So people pay. It's people pay a subscription for being able to get free games. But it's hard to evaluate. There is many. It's very different. For instance, for Fury, we had a lot, like probably 10 times more downloads with PlayStation Plus, because we were free game of the month.
Right.
But because it's time limited to a month, people go download it
just in
case.
Right, yeah.
Take it. I'm going to take that. Maybe I will have time later. Maybe it's going to stay in my backlog. With Game Pass, it's different. You don't have 3 games every 1 month. You have 100 of game every year, like
you
have a lot of choice,
and they're there for a long time.
Yeah, you download what you feel like playing. So it's much more than our sales, but less than PS Plus downloads. Feels like it's like a, I don't know, probably 300,000 downloads on Xbox.
Wow. Do you ever wonder if only those were all game sales?
Yeah. No. I think it's fine. It's
Oh yeah, listen, getting more eyes on your game is always a great thing.
Yeah, and we got paid for this.
Right.
For this, so it's fine.
And you know, hopefully people will say, "Hey, if you just have a PlayStation 5 or just a PC, I can say, listen, it's a great game. Go and play it. Like, just go get it."
Yeah, yeah.
For those players.
I'm good for that. I'm just scared of old subscription. Like,
right. If that's the model, it's going to be funky going forward.
It's fine as long as it's a bit of every.
I'm all about options. Options are great. Yeah. Like, I don't have an Xbox Series X, but I have a decent PC and I pay for Game Pass because I can play all their stuff on my PC whenever I want, even on my phone when I need to sometimes. So it's great. But again, I like having the option to do so. Before we jump into the best part of the show, rapid fire, I want to ask you one last question about Haven. And that is to tell us one thing about the game that no one else knows. Little nugget.
What is
like a fun development tidbit you can tell us? Like a fun little story or something. Just
little story fun. I have so many, but I know I have one. I can't remind it.
Yeah, it sounds juicy, whatever it is.
There is one that's funny, actually. Mm. It's completely true and very funny. So,
we make
this game about love and a couple.
Right.
And we make this feature where when they stand, they go close to each other and hug or kiss.
Mm-hmm.
So in the game inside, it happens for real.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, when I work, I have one computer in front of me and one on my right, my PC on my right and my, you know, email and Slack stuff
right
in front of me. And usually I press play on the game engine, go back to my chatting and working while it's loading and then I go back to the PC, and so many times I turn to my right and I see them hugging and kissing in the grass naked, because there was this specific bug that was not preventing the game to play, but something broke between loading the game and loading the clothes.
Uh-huh.
So they ended up being naked. So it was super funny to see them like, woohoo.
I think we gotta get some modders on this to just.
Not much to see behind the clothes, but still it was cute. It was actually like the cutest bug. They are kissing naked in the grass.
Yeah, as one tends to do. That's what I would do if I was in the grass and making out with someone. I really thought you were going to say something like, it's a game about love. And yet I am right now going through a divorce.
Yeah, no. No.
All right.
Much more cuter.
Of course. Are you expecting a child? Is that what's going on?
No.
Okay.
I have one already.
One's enough. It's fine. I'm good. Yeah. All right. So, Emric, we're going into rapid fire. Are you ready for this, bad boy?
Yes.
All right. The first question, and it's always our first question on the show, and that is, pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
No. Never.
Never. Even better. I love it. Would you rather have the power of flight or invisibility?
Flight. For sure.
This is one that's actually really close to me personally, and that is, what is the dumbest way you've ever injured yourself?
Okay, imagine you are going very slow on your bike
Okay.
But there is a little thing that is stuck in your front wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And each time you roll, it's like blink, blink, blink,
sure.
blink. Super uh-huh. annoying,
yeah.
right?
Right, yeah.
So obviously what you do is not stop, try to remove it with your left feet, mm-hmm. your left foot. Mm-hmm. And you put your foot inside the wheel so that you make a super whooshoo jump because it stops.
Uh-huh.
And you land with a 3-point landing, you know, one knee, 2 feet, like, and one arm.
Uh-huh.
Super nice landing.
Right. You nailed it.
And instead of breaking anything, you break your elbow because of the impact.
Oh my God.
The power of the impact went through my ankle to my arm to my elbow and bam, broke the elbow.
Wow. That was some force behind that landing.
Yeah.
So your legs withheld the impact, but it just traveled and broke your elbow.
So,
oh my God.
Don't put your feet in your wheel while
don't do it.
Moving. Yeah.
Stupid. Just don't do it. On an average day, how many pigeons do you think you can carry in your arms?
13?
13 pigeons? That you just said?
Yes. 13 pigeons in my arms.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, I love it.
Pigeon oh. carrier.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. What is a topic you can talk about for hours on end?
Cooking.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm. Cooking. Very nice.
Sure.
Okay.
Or drinking.
Oh, yeah, even better. Can you fold a fitted sheet?
What's a fitted?
You know, it goes over the bed. You know, that first layer that goes on the mattress.
Yeah.
With the weird corners that you can't.
Who has that anymore? I mean, I just have the big fluffy
just the blanket. That's
it. Just the blanket.
Uh huh.
But I could because
yeah, I'm not
so young. So yeah. I learned to do that.
I've seen my mom do it a couple times, and it's like a magic trick. It's like a sleight of hand thing. I'm like, how do you fucking do that?
Yeah.
What is the largest animal you could punch out with a single punch? So think about...
I'm a boxer.
So you're a boxer? Wow.
Yes. Of course. Made Fury.
God, you're fucking double dash world champion, chef.
No.
You're also a boxer.
I'm probably as average at boxing that I am as double dash, but still, I know how to throw a punch. But I think after Australian Shepherd, I can do like a medium sized dog.
A medium sized dog. So, out of all the animal kingdom, a medium sized dog is what your punch could take out, what a boxer's punch could take out.
Yes.
I can see why you make games. You don't box for a living.
Exactly.
Would you rather have bionic arms or bionic legs?
Bionic everything.
Everything. Oh my God. It's like a full cyborg, don't you?
I don't know. Bionic arm. Because I don't bionic nothing or everything. It's just
is it so you can punch out more than a dog?
Yes,
is that what
exactly.
it is?
Yeah.
What was your last thought before going to bed last night?
It was about my next game.
Oh yeah, the trilogy. Let's get into that for a minute.
I can't give more details, but that's how I work in it.
Listen, you've already you've confirmed it. It's happening right now. It's out there. It's okay. It just means we'll get you back at some point in the next 4 years. You're back on the show. What word best describes you when you're drunk?
Happy.
Happy. That's good. I like that. Yeah. Happy is good.
I'm a very happy drunk.
If they named a new sexual position after your life, what would that position be called?
The hangover.
It sounds like a little bit of a regret is rolled in there too, but you know, you had a good time on the way there. Yes. If a song were to play every single time you entered a room, what song would that be?
Very disco from Daft Punk.
Oh, okay.
You know, that super melancholic theme.
I think I would do the theme to the Golden Saucer from Final Fantasy VII because it sounds...
That's much better.
I think the first time it'll be great, but after the 10th or 20th time, it's like, God damn it, Andy's back here again. That goddamn song. Yeah. All right. What's a body part that you wouldn't mind losing?
No, the nose is really a bad human body part. It's super fragile. Right, it's ugly. I wish I had a beak.
Wow. Okay. There you go. Bionic beak. We'll get you one of those before the show is over. And I think let's end on a nice note. You've been around for a long time making some amazing games. Give a non-inspirational quote to those out there who are listening. Something to tear down morality and to make people just very depressed. Give us a very uninspired quote.
You can't make anything better than what you've already done after 33.
There you go. God, I'm on 36. I'm fucked. All right. Emmerich, this has been a blast. Thank you so much for coming on the show. You're always a great guest to talk to. The game is amazing. And before we say goodbye, where can everyone find you, the Game Bakers, and Haven? Give us all the things, all the Twitters, the Facebooks, the Discords. Plug it all right now before we leave.
Yeah, so you can find everything on our website, thegamebakers.com. You can find us on Twitter, The Game Bakers, Facebook, The Game Bakers, Discord. I never understood how it works, so there is a way to find us, I'm sure, because we have one, and YouTube as well. All right. And there is a page for Haven, The Game Bakers slash Haven.
All right. So that's Haven, which is out right now. You should all go check it out as soon as possible. So thank you, Emmerich. It's been a blast. Happy New Year, because this is now going to be in the new year. That's right. It is 2021. Sure. We survived. We made it. So look forward to another year of amazing content from us here at Dual Screens. And until next time, I'm going to take Steven's line now. Be excellent to each other.
Thank you. Very glad. Thank you very much.